Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Please welcome my guest this evening, Darren Shawl.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
If you're looking for an investigator, look no further. My guest, Darren Shawl, is on your case. Darren Shawl has been active in the paranormal community since 1995. He is the co-founder of DBK Investigations, in which he has been on multiple cases involving ghosts, Bigfoot, sea monsters, urban legends, UFOs, and you name it for anything else. He has also been the co-host of the show Paranormal Crossings Into the Light podcast, as well as DBK Case Files. He has appeared on several podcasts as a guest and has spoken at conferences. Darren was initially trained by paranormal investigators David Oster and Sharon Gill before receiving a refresher course with Aaron Collins and went on to train new members of DBK Investigations to assist with public investigations in St. Helens, Oregon and Seaside, Oregon. Darrell lives just outside of Portland, Oregon. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and get ready because I think you're going to find our conversation to be very, very interesting. Please welcome to the show, Darren Shawl. Well, good evening, Darren, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, good to have you. Of course, Darren is out on the Oregon coast, and then most people know that I am talking to him from Minnesota. And so always interesting to deal with individuals who have had experiences, maybe even different types of experiences in different parts of the country. So I'm very glad to have you here. So Darren, we're going to start out as usual on this show. People do like to hear how people came to be. They just do. And so I always ask the same basic question over and over again. But I would like you to think back to a time, youngest age preferably, when you have had either an experience or something came to be where you said to yourself, this seems a little unusual, or I'm intrigued by this. Where would that have started for you?
I would have to say that started earliest memory was 3 years old. My grandmother was from Arkansas. She was from the Appalachians. So her big thing for us kids was telling us ghost stories, folk tales, that kind of stuff. So I really kind of got introduced to a lot of myths and legends and folk tales and tall tales early on in life. And I mean, she would go on with everything. And then of course, you know, from her being from the Appalachian Mountains, you know, little cabin up in the middle of nowhere, you know, there was always the rules, you know, you don't go outside at night and whistle. And if this is here and don't look there. And if something's looking at you, you don't really see it. So, I mean, we just kind of grew up with a lot of this stuff, and it really, I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, well, you know, that's kind of weird. It was just normal for, you know, growing up.
way of life. Yeah. So I'm curious about your, it was your grandmother, right? That lived there. So I'm kind of curious, was your grandpa, was he around at the time too, or was she widowed at that
point? She was already widowed by the time I was three.
Okay. And that's, by the way, that's a little, I don't want to say it's common, but I know that my husband went through that when he was younger and very young. He didn't even know some of his grandparents and everything because they had already passed on. But let's talk a little bit about your grandmother a little bit. So especially when you're the Appalachian Mountains and it's so wooded and stuff. And what a brave woman, although, of course, she came to understand where she was living probably after being there for a period of time. Was she ever into anything of the spiritual realm of it? I mean, paranormal, spiritual, ghostly type things, or was she pretty much more wise to the woods around her and things that lurked out in the woods? How would you describe her in what way?
Oh, it's hard to describe her because she was into the ghosts. So, I mean, she would always talk about, you know, the ghostly visitors that would come by and stop at the cabin or would stop at the house and, you know, treat them with respect. Don't upset them. But then she was, you know, there was also the creatures in the woods, you know, don't make eye contact. So, I mean, she kind of walked both sides of cryptids and the ghosts. It was just kind of a, you know, like I said, don't whistle at night. There was always the, you know, treat spirits with respect. Don't whistle at night. If you see something in the woods, you really didn't see anything in the woods. It was just a lot of that old world mythology, I guess you would say, and respect for the things that go bump in the night.
Mm-hmm. Did she ever talk about or tell you about any direct experiences that she had, or whether or not this came, that these experiences also came down to her from her mother or father or grandparents? Did she ever tell you, did she go back to the extended family here and ever mention anything to you about how this has been sort of kind of in her family for a long time?
Oh yeah, it was passed down from one to the other, to the other, to the other, to the other, and so on and so forth. It was highly implied upon, you know, you treat the other side with respect.
Interesting. Yeah. Did you learn over time whether or not she was that if she had abilities or was like a psychic or practiced any of these types of mediumship type things? Did that ever come to light to you, or was this just something that she always just spoke of?
She always just spoke of it. I mean, she never came out bluntly and said, yes, the spirits are talking to me. She would just say, yes, the spirits walked by, you know, the front yard today, and they saw me and they waved hi and I respected them and they continued on their way. So if she ever identified as a medium or a psychic, I'm not really sure. It was more of a just, yeah, I saw them, you know, like, oh, you know, the neighbor across the street, I saw him in the yard and waved at him. Hey, how you doing, Bob? Mm-hmm. She never really let on to psychic, like I said, psychic abilities or anything like that. It was just a matter of fact. Oh yeah, I saw this. I saw a UFO. I saw this. It was just a normal everyday thing to her.
Wow. That's well, and it's interesting too, especially well, when you're young, also your focus can also be on other things. So it might not be delving into these questions to reel out information, as we would call it. Now let's bring the focus back on you for a moment here, though. Okay, so did you say, and correct me again if I'm wrong, because I'm always miles ahead of myself. Did you say you lived with her or you were always visiting her?
I was always visiting her. You know, child of the 70s, you know. Mom and dad were working, so, you know, we truck over to grandma's house to, you know, get taken care of. My brother was really, really young, so he couldn't really stay home alone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'd just be trucked over to grandma's house while mom and dad were working, or, mm-hmm. you know, doing their thing. So
yeah,
now we spent a lot of time over there and had a lot of story time and instilled with those otherworldly values, I guess you call it.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever see any of these? Which side was your grandmother on? Your dad's side or your mom's side?
My mother's side.
Did your mom ever talk about also having some of these gifts or abilities or experiences?
Oh yeah, she's had experiences. She's seen UFOs, seen a lot of ghosts, dealt with a lot of ghosts, worked in places with a lot of ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's been interviewed about her experiences before, so.
Mm-hmm. And did she grow up in that same house, or is this a different house that she grew up in where all these experiences were happening?
They had moved from Arkansas to Oregon back in the 40s.
Mm-hmm.
I believe right after World War II, my grandmother was a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved over here. That's where my mother was born, was out actually in another town here in Oregon.
Okay.
And then, but there was just a lot of things that happened at the old farmstead,
mm-hmm.
you know, out here in Oregon, that was, you know, UFOs, Bigfoot walking through the yard, apparently, you know, just random things that, again, they just, oh yeah, it happens, you know, mm-hmm. and
matter of fact,
my mother worked at a craft store here in Scappoose,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, you go into the little warehouse area, and boxes would fling off the walls. And if you didn't say goodbye to the ghost or hello to the ghost, you know, your key would get stuck. And you would have to say, hey, good morning, Millie. And then the door would work. And if you were leaving, you had to say goodbye. Otherwise, your car wouldn't open. Just weird things.
That was in where you're at right now in Oregon?
Yeah.
That's interesting. We'll get into that. We'll get into that shortly here. Let's go back to you for a second, and then we're going to go ahead and get into some of those stories. So do you find in yourself that you have any unusual or interesting abilities that you now recognize at all, or is it just that you've taken a real great interest into the discovery of some of this stuff, and so you're just very drawn to it? Let's start with the ability question. Do you have abilities?
I say I do, but I don't label myself as a psychic or a medium. I call myself more of a sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to see spirits, hear spirits, feel spirits, communicate with spirits.
Mm-hmm.
I have dumb luck when it comes to Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
I just happen upon them. A lot of people are like, oh, well, how is one person able to happen upon them? I'm like, it's just dumb luck.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. UFOs. Only one Nessie style creature so far.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole nother story.
Yeah. So. No. This is interesting. This is good because we're going to break it down now, and we're going to break it into these categories because one of the things that most people don't. They're not used to, of course, of many of the listeners and the watchers here, is the fact that you seem to be immersed into many aspects where you seem to have experiences with many aspects, but not just like a one-time experience, potentially more than that. And a lot of times people are just very lucky if they just have a half of an experience. So let's break this down and let's start with the parent. Okay, so before we get to that, though, because we have to kind of explain how you managed to start your group, and I think you said, what, in 1995 you might have started this, or did this happen before when you became kind of known or became an investigator? When did that all start for you?
Well, 95, I was training under a married couple who were supposed to become the next Warrens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Their take, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
But I started training with them. My current group has only been around for about 3, maybe 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of just an independent researcher, kind of did my own thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DBK came around, like I said, about 3, 4 years ago. We kind of specialize in what I call guerrilla tactics.
Mm-hmm.
because there's some places that won't let you in at all.
Right.
But, you know, I'll be a paying customer,
mm-hmm.
and I will honestly go in, mm-hmm. and I will just have, like, you know, a couple meters in my pockets.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're just walking around and you're taking the tour, I'm a paying customer. I just pull out the K2, scan around a little bit, got the little, you know, digital recorder. I'll ask a few questions, move on with the tour.
Yeah.
You know, it's so that way we can look at a place.
Mm-hmm.
We can do a quick investigation. It's all above boards because they're not going to, I've tried.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place out in Astoria here called the Flavelle Mansion, mm-hmm. The Flavelle House.
Mm-hmm.
It's a museum now.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody I've talked to has the same occurrence up on the second floor.
Oh, God.
A woman in a old style dress,
mm-hmm.
walking from across the hall into a bedroom, and all the bedrooms are all connected.
Mm-hmm.
My father, who is actually a non-believer, does not believe in any of the paranormal, UFOs, Bigfoot, nothing. He actually thought she was a reenactor.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
So he comes up the stairs, looks at her. She's standing there. She goes into the bedroom. He goes to get my mother and says, "Hey, you got to get a picture. Darren's going to love this. It's a reenactor."
Mm-hmm.
They can't find her anywhere. So they go. He goes downstairs, talks to one of the, you know, the tour guides, and says, "Hey, you guys are doing reenactments? That was a really cool dress. Can I get a picture? I got to find her, though."
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, "No, sir, we don't do reenactments here.
Mm-hmm.
This is just a museum. You just come in and you walk out." So, you know, he called me from the parking lot and said, "Hey, I think this is up your alley, and this is what happened." And I'm like, "All right, well, if my dad is seeing things and admitting, yeah, there's, I saw her, she was standing here, and then she was gone."
Mm-hmm.
She never came back down because all the bedrooms, like I said, are all interconnected on this hallway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I kind of had to go up. You know, and I asked him very nicely, "Hey, by the way, here's my card. Paranormal investigator, is there any chance we can do an investigation?"
Mm-hmm.
And the lady behind the desk said, "Well, if you pay for a ticket, you keep it down, you stay quiet, you don't announce what you're doing, and you don't loiter all day,
mm-hmm.
you can do whatever you want,
mm-hmm.
as long as you pay for your ticket."
Mm-hmm.
So I paid for the ticket, walked in. Yeah, well, I mean, we've got a couple voices, but again, the place is open, it's packed. Some voices we kind of have to discredit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was interesting to get in and look, but I mean, we have nothing definite. So,
question on that house. What was the name of that property again?
The Flavelle House, or the Flavelle Mansion, I think it is.
Okay. So I think I was there. My husband and I, years ago, we stayed over or went past by Astoria. It's like, is it over like the, not the bridge, but there's like a bridge in Astoria or something. We went over this bridge and then there was this, I could swear that it's the same place we were at. Yeah. And when we went in there, I know what the meandering's like. You know, people pay their ticket, they meander through, they walk from bedroom to bedroom or whatever. You kind of wait till they get out if you want to take some decent pictures. But he and I were up on the second floor, and I remember the room pretty vividly, and I stopped like right in a spot on the second floor in this one bedroom where supposedly some man, aged man, used to appear. And I stopped and I said, "I need to stop right here." I said to my husband, I said, "I feel something. I feel really weird. I feel like I think I'm standing on somebody." I just said, "There's just something really strange about this." And so we went downstairs. And I was going to ask them if the place was haunted. And before I did that, though, we noticed that there was a bookshelf. And I pulled the book from the shelf that was like a history of the place or whatever. And I was just thumbing through it really fast. I don't know how I came to it, but I did. And it talked about this place, this spot on the second floor where everyone seems to have noted that there was either an older man that somehow was lurking around in this bedroom. It's kind of like a master bedroom type, and that he liked to stand right in this one certain spot on that floor. And I looked at my husband and I said, did I not call this or what? And so I said, I was standing on that man, but I mean, he wasn't there. He was there, but he wasn't there. And I said, isn't that interesting how I could identify exactly where it was? And here it is right in this book. And I'm pointing right to it that someone wrote about, this is the spot that this guy was at. That's interesting. I never saw, didn't know too much about the woman that you're talking about in her old-fashioned Victorian or whatever clothing, because a lot of times these full-bodied apparitions do look really real, which brings me to my next question to you. Have you ever seen a full-bodied apparition that had come and then gone? What are your thoughts on that?
I actually have. I have seen three full-bodied apparitions that look like they're real and standing there.
Mm-hmm.
The first time was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, this is back in, you know, late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Our high school auditorium has this ghost. And this is kind of where I got into, you know, Ghostbusters had just come out. In high school, me and another buddy decide, you know what, we're gonna go in, we're gonna find the ghost.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because now we're jazzed. Oh, wow, you can actually be a paranormal investigator. You don't have to read about it or just be interested. You can actually go in and do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't have any equipment with us, because I mean, at that point, you know, we're talking 1988.
Yeah.
You got real tapes, you know. But we just go into the auditorium, we got the keys from the teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he hung back for a second. I walk out on stage, and there is a woman standing on the stage with one spotlight on her. She turns and looks at me, and then the light goes off, and she's gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was I worked in the lighting booth for most of the place,
mm-hmm.
and I knew for a fact that light did not have a bulb and was not hooked up. It was a dead light.
Yeah.
So I, you know, walk out of stage, she looks at me, turns around, looks, smiles. I turn around, walk back in, hand the keys to the teacher. I'm like, I don't need to do anything. I've seen enough today.
Mm-hmm.
And then she actually ended up coming back to me my senior year. I was up in the catwalks, and I have a bad fear of heights.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm up in the catwalks over top, and I'm changing the light films. Well, the person that was with me decided to leave down through the lighting booth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they took the keys, locked everything behind them, because they thought I was coming down the other side onto mm-hmm. the stage. So he locked everything up behind him. So I walked back over down the catwalk, which I'm already terrified of,
mm-hmm.
get to the doors, I can't open them. So I turn around, I go, okay, I'm going to have to go down the stage. I don't want to, I'm going to have to. I get halfway down the catwalk to get to the stage. They turn the lights off in the entire auditorium.
Oh, geez.
And I'm standing on this little 5-foot catwalk.
Pitch black?
Pitch black.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know, I'm like, all right, I don't have a flashlight. I didn't think this far ahead. And the same woman off the stage appears off to the side of the catwalk.
Mm-hmm.
And she's glowing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm crawling because I'm terrified.
Right.
I have to crawl down the catwalk to get to the stairs, and mm-hmm. she's basically leading me.
Mm-hmm.
She's just, you know, about 5 feet ahead of me. Just help me get down. And I get down, I get onto the floor, I come not just flying through the door. Yeah, and the teacher's there, and she's locking everything up. She's getting ready to go home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, She's like, yeah, I thought you already went home. I'm like, no, I've been up in the catwalks for 15, 20 minutes. You know, you guys turned off all the lights. You know, I'm like, Vera had to come out and actually show herself, and she doesn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but no, I've seen, living in Montana,
mm-hmm.
and I went for a walk. We were in Glacier National Park.
Mm-hmm.
And this is right after high school. And I'm just exploring the hillsides and everything else. You really shouldn't do it in a national park with grizzly bears. You're walking by yourself. Let's go explore. Well, I'm walking along, and I happen to see an older man standing up on the hillside.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just standing there, and he's hands in his pockets, and he's looking around, and he kind of looks over at me, mm-hmm. does a little wave. And I'm like, okay, all right.
Mm-hmm.
Come around the trail, because I figure, well, this guy seems to know what's going on. I'm going to go talk to him.
Right.
I'm a little turned around. Well, I come around the bend back to where he's standing.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer there, but there is a lone headstone of the guy who built the lodge.
Hmm.
So I just backtrack. I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. It's 2:00 in the afternoon, and there's a man standing there at the headstone.
Mm-hmm.
So I backtrack, go back to the lodge, and I'm like, I talk to his grandson.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, hey, I was out walking on the hillside, and I saw an old man, and he seemed to be looking over the valley. And he goes, yeah, that's my grandpa. He's the one that built this whole place.
Mm-hmm.
He wanted to be buried here. He made a deal with the tribe. So, yeah, you probably saw him looking out over the valley, and he's just, he's scoping it out. And I'm like, wow, okay, way to go.
Mm-hmm.
2 for 2.
Did it not irk you a little bit or bug you a little bit just kind of knowing that what was standing there was this apparition? Obviously, did you say it was his grandson that said that he likes to look out? Did he say that he had seen his grandpa, and like he has seen him before too, doing that, and that's how he knew that he liked to stand there and watch?
Oh, apparently a lot of people have seen him sitting up on the hillside overlooking everything.
Okay.
And then they'll go back to the family and be like, hey, we saw a guy up there, we walked up to talk to him, there's a headstone,
mm-hmm.
and he's like, yeah, I've heard the story a lot. It happens.
Interesting. That is interesting. The one that's really, though, the one I was going to comment on earlier was the one where you're in the gymnasium. And so you were by yourself, though, right? So has anyone else seen this, call it the woman on the stage, or are you the only one that has ever really seen this woman on the stage?
People have seen her walk around.
Mm-hmm.
They've seen her light turn on, turn off. Mm-hmm. The light is now gone.
Oh.
They've removed that entire light bar.
Mm-hmm.
But every now and then, like my nieces were in band at that high school.
Mm-hmm.
So we go in for, their band recitals
right.
in the auditorium there. And having been on the lighting set and knowing where all the lights are pointed,
mm-hmm.
and knowing the setup, there was always that one light off to the side of the stage that you're like, okay, if you track this,
mm-hmm.
it should go to these lights up on the wall, but there's no lights on the wall. So where's this light coming from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
I haven't really had the chance to talk to a lot of other people and say, hey, have you seen something? I mean, my best friend and I, last day of school, we're getting ready for graduation, we asked teacher, hey, can we be locked in the auditorium for an hour? Let us go in, lock us in. We're going to sit in the very center of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
Turn off all the lights.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see her, but we heard somebody walking around.
Mm-hmm.
And we made sure. We said, listen, please make sure nobody comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Keep all the doors locked. Lock us in for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And we could hear someone walking across the stage, walking across the catwalks. But no, there wasn't any sightings on that one.
Wow. And they let you do that, and they didn't. They obviously, you must have had an in with somebody there to say, I know that in my high school or wherever, they would say, heck no, you know, liability, you know, or whatever. So no, we're going home. You know, that I find it interesting. I've only seen for myself a brief apparition. Are you familiar, since you've done this a while? I refer to it as an electrical cobweb. It's like walking through an energy mass, mm-hmm. that feels like a cobweb, and then you have this cobweb-like feeling all over your face and everything. But what I do is I light up like a Christmas tree. I can just feel all the tingling and just the rush of energy. Well, there's one time when I was in this really haunted, very old 900 over in Europe, bed and breakfast, the situation where I did walk through this cobweb thing, feeling like this, probably walked through the apparition. And same with the gal that was leading us to go to our room. And I saw the woman actually rush around the corner. I saw half of her face, and I was able to identify it with a picture that I found of her. She was the maid that liked to hang about there, one of 12. But anyway, my husband just saw, about a year and some months ago, his first full-bodied, half-bodied apparition. He was in a museum boat in Iowa, and by himself, and he was looking in a direction, and he saw someone standing in a doorway, and he made out the pants and the shirt and the white, little bit of the white beard hanging down. And as he was going to focus, because he thought someone was just standing there looking at him, it disappeared, like woof, you know, in like 5 seconds and stuff. And so he to this day, he will never back down that it was anything other than that. But I find that interesting. Have you ever had an apparition of that sort, look at you, where you actually could see their facial features, or look at you directly, where you could tell that they were intelligent enough to kind of have that contact with you? Or has it just been from like a distance or some space when you see these things?
I would say the closest I've been to a full body apparition is probably about 8 feet.
8 feet?
8 feet.
Were they looking at you at the time?
Yeah, they were. So there's this patch of woods here in town.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandmother used to live on the backside of those woods.
Mm-hmm.
So there were times that we'd go across the river, which we'd have to do, cross the river on the bridge, go through the woods, the grandma's house we go.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going over to visit. I was like, okay, I haven't seen her in a while, you know. Had a day off. I figured, you know what? It's a nice day. I'm just going to walk.
Mm-hmm.
So I enter the woods, and there's a little patch we like to call the zone of silence. And it's just this weird area. There's no birds. There's no vegetation. It's just this little area where everything is just quiet.
Yeah.
You can't hear the roads, nothing.
Yeah.
So I go walking through there. It's me and my buddy. We're just walking. And first we heard a horse galloping.
Mm-hmm.
So we turned around, and we could see there was no horse,
mm-hmm.
but we could hear it running at us.
Yeah.
And we could see the hoof marks in the dust.
Mm.
And it blows through us.
Mm-hmm.
And I had hair once upon a time,
mm-hmm.
and it moved my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we turn to follow it, where it's going, you see the hoof marks
mm-hmm.
continue on.
Mm-hmm.
So this phantom horse is galloping along,
mm-hmm.
but then there's a little native child standing there, about 8 feet away,
mm-hmm.
and he's just staring at us, and he's looking at him, looking at me, looking at him, looking at me, just back and forth between me and my buddy,
mm-hmm.
and then he just steps behind a tree,
mm-hmm.
but the tree is only like 3 inches wide,
mm-hmm.
and he's gone,
just mm-hmm. poof.
So, yeah, about 8 feet away.
And when he was looking at you, not residual, more intelligently, you would say?
Very intelligent. Because of the fact that, I mean, it was registering the two of us at the same time. And then, you know, I'm looking at him, looking at my buddy, looking at him, looking at my buddy. And as we're looking back and forth and that hit, it's looking back and forth at us. So, I mean, it was definitely following what we were doing.
That was a full body. How old do you think that that kid was?
About 12 or 13.
Okay. All right. And dressed in Native clothing, Native American clothing. So very, that's very interesting. And you, you wonder what their story was back then, or why they're hanging about there, and why all of a sudden they popped up, and or he, it was a he, right?
Yes.
Wanted to show himself to you. That that's that is interesting. I mean, I hear these stories once in a while. I mean, I, there's a story where, you know, especially in crowds, usually in a crowd, from what I gather, if there's like 200 people, there's probably a couple flitting about within the crowd, just kind of mingling amongst. People probably don't even notice or see them. I know that I worked with a gentleman who was an EMT at a very large, popular state fair here in Minnesota, and he noticed a woman kind of looking like kind of a bag lady, kind of meandering through with the crowd as they're going in a general direction. And then she looked, he looked down and noticed she didn't have any legs. You know, it was like, oh, okay, she's just floating by. But I find it interesting how some people can see certain apparitions and some people cannot. Did you say that you were with your buddy and he also saw this?
Yeah, he also
saw this. He did too. Okay. I don't know, what do you think counts for that? Have you ever kind of looked inside yourself to try to wonder where this all, other than your family, usually they say it's on the mother's side, but I think for me, it's on both. You know, some of these abilities, or when they decide to show and then they decide not to. What are your thoughts on that? Where do you think this all came from? Have you ever figured it out, or what are your thoughts?
Well, I've always thought about the fact that, you know, as in most families growing up, you know, the child has an imaginary friend, and then after a while, that imaginary friend goes away.
Yeah,
and then they never see it again.
Yeah.
My theory has always been that maybe the imaginary friends are a family member from the past that are there to help them out. You know, kid's got some issues, you know, feeling lonely. So, you know, great grandpa decides he's going to pop in, you know, help out a little bit. Great grandma, you know, whoever, whatnot. But unless, you know, because society, we do tend to shut things down, you know, grow up, don't do this, don't do that. You know, this is the quadrant you live in, so stay inside the box.
Right.
But some people, if you're not forced in that box, the box is not really defined. I believe that you can, you know, I believe we're all born with these extra abilities, but as long as we don't box ourselves in, you know, we can flourish with these things. You know, sometimes, you know, I mean, you got people that'll come out and, you know, psychic mediums, and they're like, yeah, I never knew I had this until this happened. I believe we always had it. It's just sometimes we reawaken. You know, there's just that part in our brain that, that wakes up, comes back to life. And then, you know, you remember what you could do again.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it's my husband, by the way, when he was three, he had an imaginary friend. And but I think he would describe the individual not to be a child, but more so of like a mom, a man, or a older adult, or an older whoever. And how he came to learn of whether or not it was his deceased brother, which the deceased brother passed away at birth, or whether or not it was his deceased uncle, kind of remains a mystery. I mean, this person would always play with him. And so one day, his mother, my husband's mother, said to him, who are you playing with? Who's out there? You know? And he said, well, and he's three, I'm playing with Robert. Okay, Robert. Well, what my husband didn't know until he was age 50, and when I had a conversation with his mother in the kitchen, which he had overheard, they never talked about the fact that he had a brother by the name of Robert. They never brought it up. Call it what you want. I don't know how you can go to age 50 and never learn that you didn't have another brother. But when I said, oh, yeah, we had three, but one passed. Oh, okay, what, did you have a name for him? Yeah, we called him Robert. And my husband said when he heard that, he just absolutely froze sitting in the living room hearing this, because then all of a sudden he remembered playing with this person, man, older, you know, you probably know this as well as I do, because I photographed what I believe to be my relatives in a screened window. And you brought up something that happened to me when that happened to me, dead silence, no bird, no noise, no nothing, walking around on the property. Thought it was really unusual. It was a day after a tornado basically ripped through the area. Everything was staticky. You could hear that a little bit. But all of a sudden, it got really quiet, like dead quiet, like no sound quiet. And for a moment, I thought I lost my hearing. And I was shooting pictures, right, and of the outside of the house. The house was locked up. It was my dad's childhood property, et cetera, et cetera. And then came to learn, once I developed the pictures, that something seemed a little weird in the window, in the upper window. And then that's how I got my first laptop and had it digitized and then blew it up. And lo and behold, little girl and an older man. And I do believe, and that's where I learned to become telepathic, or I learned I was telepathic during that situation, because they mentioned that I had something wrong in the genealogy about her. And yeah, sure enough, I did. I had the wrong name, but it was very interesting. Now, no family member has ever been able to capture since that point. The house is now burned down and stuff. Yeah. That property came haunted. Let's talk a little bit about some of your own experiences when it involves properties and stuff like that. So people must call you to investigate certain properties, I would presume. What are some of your most, without revealing too much, I guess, that you can share, interesting cases of trying to figure something out for someone?
Well, our most favorite case of all is, we call it the Tiger Demon House, because we give all of our cases a fancy name. Uh-huh. A lot of groups will give it like a number, mm-hmm, you know, 17-A1. I'm like, we ain't doing that. We're gonna do titles. We're gonna name it a title. So we've got the Tiger Demon House. Mm-hmm. I get a call that this man who's a strict Catholic, mm-hmm, he says, I need you to come out. I don't believe in this stuff, but I have hardwood floors and I have a dog walking around my house. I'm like, okay, well, I know you have a dog. I mean, is it just maybe your dog? And he goes, no, my dog's in bed with me and my girlfriend. And there's a dog coming down the hallway and scratching at the door. I need you guys to come out and do this. Mm-hmm. So we go out. We set up all of our equipment, but it's a late night one. Mm-hmm. And we start interviewing the couple. Mm-hmm. The girlfriend is... she's into the gothic stuff, the witchy stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, while we've got all of our gear set up, we could see the shadow coming down the hallway. And we have light sensors. Mm-hmm. So one light turns on, turns off. One light turns on, turns off, all the way up. And this thing is standing at the, you know, looking into the living room where we are at. Mm-hmm. And everybody sees this menacing shadow. And then it turns around and walks back down the hallway. Lights on, lights off, lights on, lights off. So we kind of break up into teams. And we're like, okay, well, we got activity in this room, in this room. And I get the spirit box and I'm in the front room. And we're doing, you know, okay, we got to figure out who this is. And he goes, well, you know what? It might be so-and-so. He died in this house. I'm like, I will ask. So we started asking the spirit box, and you know, it's just a little box that scans through the radio frequencies. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get little tiny words, little fragments. Mm-hmm. We were getting full sentences in the same voice over and over and over again. So I asked, what is your name? I am the Lamb. Hmm. No, No, you're not the lamb. What is your name? Worship me. Nope. Try again. What is your name? I am Lucifer.
Oh, no.
Well, we happen to have had a priest on speed dial. Gave him the address. I said, all right, man, we got to turn this over to you. We're outside of our pay grade at this point.
Yeah.
So priest comes out, blesses the house, blesses the people. I get a call a week later that it's getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay. Yeah. I don't know what else we can do for you. I mean, I could send the priest back out. And I said, all right, well, listen, your girlfriend's really into witchcraft. Does she have any altars or anything laying around? He goes, I don't know, I'll check. And he goes in the garage, and I can hear him, and he's rumbling around, picks up the phone. He goes, okay, I know what the problem is now. And I'm like, okay, well, what's the problem? He's like, there are four boxes here with books and candles and, you know, animal parts and all this other stuff. And I'm like, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Can you find out the story on what's with these boxes and these books? You know, and I could hear, you know, I could hear him talking in the background. He's, you know, what's going on with this?
Mm-hmm.
And apparently she was dating a cult leader who they all practice black magic and blood rituals and a lot of bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he had offered himself up as a sacrifice.
Oh, no.
So she left because, you know, come on, the dude's gone. The cult's broken up pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
So she leaves, takes the guy's stuff, the ex-boyfriend's stuff with her. So it's all his witchcraft books, all the tomes as he's written, you know, all that bad negativity has now come with him. And I'm like, all right, well, here's what I need you to do. I need you to take it all out to a burn pile. I need you to take a bunch of salt and burn it.
Mm-hmm.
Salt it, burn it.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me what happens. So he salts it, burns it, kicks her out. Because like I said, he's a very heavy-duty Catholic. You know? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yep, I kicked her out. I don't want to deal with this. And last I heard, there's been no activity since that happened.
Hmm.
So that's one of our favorite cases. You know, then there's just the little cases that we've been into like multiple times. There's the old Masonic building in St. Helens.
Mm-hmm.
We've been in that thing 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a little girl named Wendy. She's about 8 or 9 that likes to talk to us. Right now, it's currently used as a haunted house for Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not able to get back into it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
There's the old city hall that we've been in about 6 times.
Mm-hmm.
And we're the only team that's ever been into the city hall.
Hmm.
It used to be a mortuary.
Oh.
So the brothers who built it, they mm-hmm. made one wing of it a bank. One of the brothers was a mortician and a carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
So you could bring in your dead body and he would make a casket,
mm-hmm.
make your furniture set, embalm the body, and then do all the funeral services all right there, one-stop shopping.
Oh, my God.
And then the other brother was a doctor who had an office upstairs.
Creepy.
It's very creepy.
I, you know, the thing is, people always wonder if the soul is hanging about, whether they're in the funeral home or whether they're here or there. I just got done interviewing someone. We talked a little bit about, well, what are your thoughts? I think they hang around the cemetery. And I guess the answer to that is I don't think that everybody hangs around all these places. I think once in a while, something is hanging about and hasn't gone anywhere, and maybe they find it a place of comfort. Have you ever brought anything home with you?
Oh, no. Oh, no, no. I've got enough things here at the house as is.
Mm-hmm.
I take all the necessary precautions before I leave residence. You know, hey, you're not allowed to follow us home. You know, smudge, do the whole nine. Yeah. I've got enough here at the house to worry about.
Well, I don't know if anything will happen while we are currently interviewing, but I can tell you that in my last maybe 6 or 7 interviews, something has always happened or showed up. And everything from A, B, C, D, you name it. And so I've been lucky. I haven't had too much go on in the last couple interviews. But if you talk about anything that is going on in your home, do you think that, not that we want anything to show up, but do you think it'll stir it up? Or are you able to talk about what's happening in your home?
Oh, I can talk about it. I've got the whole place warded and smudged, and we do weekly smudges here. We have a spirit. I share a house with some other people, and we have a spirit here named Walter.
Walter?
And Walter's he's a bitter old man. He's grabbed my wife's hair before. Like, she'll be walking upstairs, and hard enough to, you know, she'll go back.
Mm-hmm.
He'll move things.
Mm-hmm.
He threw one of the shelves down on me one time because I told him to knock it off.
What was on the shelf?
That was fun.
Anything on the shelf? Was there books or anything that he tossed?
It was canned goods.
Canned goods on it. Obviously.
Yeah, it tipped.
Tipped, yeah. Yeah, and there's probably no vibration in the place to make it tip. Yeah.
Nope.
And so we need to educate our viewers and listeners a little bit on where you live, because I was just out. Most people know I was just at an Oregon Ghost Conference in Seaside, Oregon. And by the way, I know for a fact that when I left there, I brought something home with me, even though I did not go on any investigations while I was there. But something was on the stage with me. I knew it because I felt extreme tingling, and that's either somebody trying to I've had people out in the audience try that are like psychics or something like that, try to scan me or do whatever, and I could feel that, or something wanted to stand right next to me. And so I don't know if you brought anything home, but it took a while, and I kind of turned into a monster. But anyway, I'm back to me again. But we need to educate people a little bit about the Seaside and where you're at. I don't know, how far away are you from Seaside, Oregon?
I'm about an hour and 40 minutes. I'm closer to Portland than I am Seaside.
Okay. That whole area seems to be real active for some reason. At least from what I can tell. And would you say the area that you're in is as active, or are you in a house that's very old and has just acquired, like Walter, for example?
I think Walter was here before we ended up got the place.
Mm-hmm.
St. Helens and Scappoose, we're only 7 miles apart. Like St. Helens used to be an old port town.
Mm-hmm.
This whole area used to be Native American lands.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there was camps, which is why we saw the little boy. We were walking through an old camp.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've got it down. Lewis and Clark said, you know, we saw a camp here, this doot-doot-doot, and we're right there in the camp.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the whole place is just riddled with all kinds of debauchery, there's double crossing. I mean, like, most of downtown St. Helens is, you know, all the buildings are named after families because it was that family at that time that built this building, because they're like, you know what, nope, we're taking this, we're going to build a building that's 2 stories high.
Mm-hmm.
And then these people are like, okay, well, we're going to block your view of the river.
You've been doing a lot of investigations, and you live in this haunted house, and I would presume Walter doesn't act up all the time, though. Does Walter act up when he wants to act up, or what are your thoughts about that?
He used to act up quite often, but once we started putting St. Benedict medallions in all the doorways, you know, there's a St. Benedict medallion pretty much in every single corner of every single room.
Mm-hmm.
Had them all blessed, put them all up in the corners. We try to make sure we keep him at bay.
Mm-hmm.
And then our haunted doll we keep out in a shop way in the back of the property. So he is not allowed in the building at all because he is not a friendly guy.
Let's talk about that doll. So I had a haunted doll. I had to drive it 125 miles away wrapped in, even though it was wrapped in a garbage bag, I did everything I could to say, this is the end of the road. I mean, a lot of really bad things were happening with this haunted doll. I want to talk about yours. Where did you acquire that doll from?
I actually acquired Abe. He is a Raggedy Ann doll. I don't know why Raggedy Ann dolls seem to be possessed so much.
I know.
But I was dating this girl, mm-hmm. and she had a little girl. And I had come over to visit, and she had gotten this doll at a woman's shelter. Mm-hmm. She had gone there for an AA meeting, mm-hmm. and there was a space for the kids to go, and there was, you know, take a toy, you know, type of situation going on. Well, the daughter had picked up this doll. Mm-hmm. So by the time I come over to visit, you know, I knock on the door, door opens. She hands me the doll, mm-hmm. and says, get this out of here. I'm like, okay, well, what's going on? Just take it and throw it away. I'm like, okay. And I go back downstairs to my car and I open up the trunk and I throw it in the trunk. Mm-hmm. Not really thinking. I'm like, okay, it's a perfectly good doll. I know other little kids that would probably want to play with this. Throw it, mm-hmm. in the trunk, grab my suitcase, go back upstairs. I'm like, okay, what's going on? What's this doll doing that is so scary?
Right.
Well, the doll's getting up and it's moving from room to room to room, and the head turns and it looks at people, and I'm like, okay, all right, well, you know, I guess I'm the perfect person to take it. Mm-hmm. We broke up shortly afterwards, and I had forgotten the doll was in my car, and I got T-boned, and the car was demolished. So I had taken the doll, unloaded the car, brought everything home. Weird things kept happening more than just Walter. So I finally was like, all right, we got to figure this out. So I went on our Facebook page, did a live session with them, put the doll in the middle of the salt ring, put the spirit box, some sensors and stuff, and we started talking to it. Because at this point, we had been calling it Annie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Annabelle, we called it Annie. We took it to a bunch of like public investigations and stuff. We had psychics walk in the door, take one look at it, and go, nope, I'm out. Well, you just paid $20 to do an investigation with us. Nope, don't care. Nope, I'm out. You know, and then the people that were putting on the thing, they're like, well, you know, we're making money, but we don't have anybody in the seats. You know, and on their end, it's a show. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I brought a doll because, if, you know, we get activity off of this thing. So I don't know what to tell you. So we sit it down, finally circle salt, all the devices, and everything. We start talking to it.
Mm-hmm.
We get the fact that his name is Abraham. He died in the late 1800s in what is now Pasco, Washington.
Mm-hmm.
He felt that it was a wrongful death. He does not know why he's in the doll. He kept saying again and again, I wasn't cheating at cards. Those were legit. So mm-hmm. apparently he was caught cheating at cards.
Right.
So why he's in the doll, he doesn't know. We don't know. Somewhere along the line, he got sucked into it or something. We don't know the full history. But Abraham does come with a set of rules. And he was very adamant about these rules. That the only way that I can get rid of him is he has to be willingly accepted by somebody else.
Hmm.
So I have to go up to the next person and say, listen, this doll is haunted. His name is Abraham. Do you accept this doll? And that person must say, yes, I willingly accept this doll. And then it will be, otherwise he just won't leave. So when I took the doll from the door and I willingly accepted it and then threw it in my trunk, the curse got passed on to me. So Abraham is now sitting in a box that's covered in salt inside of another box. Inside, you know, There's a lot. I spent a lot of money on a lot of salt. He's encased. And nobody in the house wants him in. So he sits out in one of the barns. And that's where he sits. He just sits in a box.
Well, we'll have to definitely have you back. But right now, what I need you to do is tell people how they can listen or find you or see more about some of the things that you have done. Where would you like to direct everybody at this point?
The best place would be facebook.com/DPK Investigations.
Thank you so much, Darren, for sharing your experiences and being on the show today.
All right, thank you for having me.